Hey, happy Monday. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. It's Blake Murphy. It's Julia Kreutz. It's another bad weekend for the Toronto Blue Jays as they drop 2 of 3 to the Cleveland Guardians, finish a homestand 3-3 against competition, and once again find themselves a couple games back in the division, couple games below 500, and looking for any semblance of momentum to build. Julia, how you doing?
I am doing okay. How are you doing? Happy birthday.
Thank you.
This is so exciting. I love that we're here together. I know it's a Monday. It's not ideal after how the weekend went for the Blue Jays, but I hope that you're happy to be here too and to be spending a little bit of your birthday with me.
Yeah, I mean, that part of it's great. My birthday, there is a long history of Toronto sports teams getting pantsed on May the 5th. I obviously, in my previous life, covered the Toronto Raptors extensively as a beat writer. And if any Raptors fans remember 3 years in a row, LeBron James's Cleveland Cavaliers punking the Toronto Raptors, a lot of the biggest games in that, including LeBron's wild game winner over an outstretched OG Anunoby, happened to come on May the 5th. The Leafs are always tripping over themselves this time of year. There have been some bad Leaf days on my birthday as well. At least the Toronto Blue Jays have today off, so they can't hurt me. The Toronto Raptors can't hurt me today. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, game one against the Florida Panthers. Yeah, we're ready. What are you going to do? Stab me? Do your worst.
No, we're going to reverse those fortunes. This is the year that things begin to change. I feel it, Blake. I feel it.
Sure.
The Maple Leafs are going to win it. And it's a new era of Blake Murphy birthdays coming
sure.
right up.
I will believe it when I see it. Not reversing things. We're the Toronto Blue Jays. Again, they lost 2 of 3. Fun one on Friday. They win 5-3. Nathan Lucas comes up in a big spot in the 8th. Chris Bassett had been okay, and then the bullpen really picked him up. Chad Green, Brendan Little, Jeff Hoffman lock it down. Then Saturday rolls around, and that overworked bullpen kind of rears its head. Kevin Gausman, by the way, first start back after that 53-pitch third inning from the weekend prior. Awesome. Six yeah. innings, no earned runs, 9 strikeouts. Jays struggled to add to their 3-1 lead, though. Eventually, Jimmy Garcia blows it in the 9th, the first time all season he's allowed runs. And then Sunday rolls around. They drop this one 5-4. Bowden Francis struggles. The bullpen has to cover 4 2/3 innings, but luckily there's an off day today and some new blood coming in that we'll talk about a little later in the show. And then the big one, if Saturday was about not tacking on extra runs and that backfiring because your bullpen's so overworked and they've had to pitch so often in these leverage spots, well, then Sunday was about the other team's bullpen tried to give it to you, like really gave you opportunity after yeah. opportunity, and you were not able to come back. Weirdly, they, for the weekend, so that's a lot of missed opportunity, it feels like. For the weekend, they actually hit 8-for-33 with runners in scoring position, which isn't that bad. It's right around 250, which would be middle of the league. But the big headline item in this one, 18 runners left on base across Saturday and Sunday. When you lose a pair of one-run games to a team that's, or a one-run game and a two-run game to a team that's okay but not amazing, yeah. feels like another weekend of missed opportunities.
It does, and you know, I've been speaking about a little bit on this show as well as the pre and post game shows with Joe Ali about how much bad luck becomes amplified when you put yourself in one or two situations a game to actually score runs. That's not necessarily the case. It wasn't the case over the weekend. The Blue Jays did give themselves plenty of opportunities, but
I said it, 33 at-bats with runners in scoring position over the course of the series.
And so you can't blame that on bad luck anymore. You can't. Obviously, we saw a little bit of that, too. There were a couple of moments yesterday as well as Saturday in which Blue Jays could have tacked on a few more runs, and they actually put together a good at-bat or two, and those landed in gloves on the other side by the Guardians. But most of all, you know, or mostly, for the most part, we didn't actually see all that many threatening at-bats from that lineup. And I think that the first thing that comes to mind is the length of this lineup is clearly an issue, especially when you have to scratch Dalton Barshow, right?
It's yes.
That was so clear yesterday.
Yeah, late scratch with low back soreness, which here on my 39th birthday, maybe I'll start to get familiar with a little bit, Dalton Barshow. So some context on the season. I mentioned they left 18 runners on base over Saturday and Sunday. They are down to 21st in batting average with runners in scoring position. They're 26th in weighted runs created plus, so taking into account park factors and all that stuff. And they are 29th in isolated slugging, which is how much power you're adding on top of just hitting for an average. There is also a stat And sorry, this is a little bit mathy, but I think it does do a good job contextualizing how the Blue Jays have failed to execute in big spots. There's a stat called RE24, which takes every at-bat and looks at, okay, there's a runner on first and second with nobody out. What do you expect to get out of that situation? Okay, there's a runner on third, two out. What do you expect to get? And it takes all the expectation on league average versus what you've actually done. The Blue Jays have underperformed that by 31 runs so far this year. So you get runners in a spot, you're in a big situation. This doesn't control for quality of hitter, but minus 31 runs so far relative to what you'd expect with runners on X bases and X number of out. That is bottom five in the league. It ain't great.
Yeah, it's fascinating to sort of look back at the early season and the way that the Blue Jays were managing to win games. It's because the situational part of their offense was pretty okay. If they had a runner on third, fewer than two outs, you felt pretty good about that run coming across. Obviously, that was when the rotation was pretty much rolling, save for that number five spot. The bullpen was not heavily taxed. They were pretty well rested because it was early in the season, and so it was a little bit easier at that point to hold on to small leads. But you felt pretty good about, you know, certain situations. That sort of went away as well. And there are a few at-bats and a few moments. We don't even have to look all the way back to Saturday. We can look at yesterday and, you know, that are illustrations to what you're talking about. First inning, that came to be.
We'll get into that because I do want to talk about the first of the eighth inning specifically.
Yes,
so Saturday, there were three instances. If you're pulling your hair, why are you talking about the Saturday one? Yes, the first, third, and fourth, they both had golden opportunities. In the first, Bo obviously homered, but they put runners on second and third after that with only one out, couldn't get one across. Third inning, runners on second and third, nobody out. They only get one across. Fourth inning, two on, one out, nobody scores. And then you just kind of, those were your opportunities to add runs. But Sunday, there were some pull your hair out one. So it started with the first inning. You mentioned it. The Jays have runners on first and third, and Anthony Santander hits a grounder to first. Vlad holds up. So the first baseman steps on first. Kyle Manzardo steps on first, gets the out there, throws the second. Vlad holds up. And I think what Vlad is thinking there is if I stop, I can bait the fielder to come to me. And then at that point, Bo takes off for home. And the fielder decides, no, obviously I'm going to go home and get the runner at home. Bo Bichette gets thrown out at home. A weird double play, like two steps away from being a triple play, by the way. That's an awful tone setter to start a game.
It is, and there was just so much hesitancy in that play. It started with Vladdy, who I sort of understand what he was trying to accomplish. It was just not at all the right moment or the right play or the right situation to try to get that done. Bo at first didn't even consider going, it felt like. He was just standing at third base because obviously that was a double play. And John Schneider speaking after the game saying, listen, the best case scenario there, the realistic best case scenario that is probably double play and Bo stays at third. That's kind of what I expected, at least when I saw that ball leave Anthony Santander's bat. But because Vladdy hesitates and looks back so clearly, Bo is also put in a little bit of a difficult position where he sees what Vladdy is doing. And I don't know if it's a little bit of an automatic instinct that kicks in when you see Vladdy stop. It's like, okay, well, then I have to go. This is what we are trying to do with this base running play. But there was so much hesitancy, both from Vladdy and from Bo in that moment. And it just felt, sure, like Schneider speaking after the game and calling it a weird play. Certainly a weird play. It didn't have to be a weird play. It was a pretty standard routine double play in which the runner on third just needs to stand there and wait for the next batter.
The only weird thing about it, and it's not even weird, but just like the only thing that might throw you off is Manzardo steps on the bag first instead of going right to second. If he goes right to second, it's very, very simple, right? Vlad's trying to at least disrupt the double play ball. Santander's trying to beat it out to be safe at first. Bo's probably holding up at third because Manzardo looks him back. The only thing that gets unconventional about it is because Manzardo steps on the bag, Vlad freezes. And again, best interpretation, most charitable interpretation, Vlad freezes because he thinks, okay, he has to tag me. I can draw the attention of the defender.
But then you can't telegraph your punch and just look back at Bo. And Bo is still also hesitating in that moment. If you're going to do that, you need to be 100% assertive. This is what we're going
and
with.
And honestly, and this is a tough read, snap read in real time, but it does line up with this team hasn't always been the sharpest base running team in these weird situations. Yes. Is you are probably, like, Vlad probably pulled up too early also, where they're just like...
Precisely. I agree with you.
If he runs through to second base, like, you do, like, yeah, don't run into the tag, but if you run hard to second base and force them to make the play, that buys that precious extra second and a half for Bo to take off there. But I think it's probably more on Bo's read than
really?
Vlad's...
I don't know about that. Okay. Because, listen, Bo was not going. He was never going at first until Vladdy froze in that moment. And that to me is, you know, also a mistake, because if you're Bo in that situation, you need to understand that there is no way you're going to get to home even after Vladdy freezes. But it is still on Vlad to just have a little bit of a better feel for the situation. He is smart enough to do that. And he is a smart enough base runner to do that, and just that eluded pretty much everyone involved in that
moment. So Bo and Vlad are hilarious when it comes to base running, because they both make like positive galaxy brain base running things sometimes, and then they both just make galaxy brain mistakes sometimes. Sorry to use a internet term like galaxy brain, but like big, like very heads up positive plays and then very heads down negative plays. Okay, so that sets a weird tone for the game. The third inning, they get the bases loaded with two out. Springer flies out. It's a good pitch, a good swing. That happens.
Right.
They hadn't quite gotten to Tanner Bibee yet. He had to leave early anyway in that one with a cramp. But, you know, you can't nitpick too much. Springer getting a good pitch, putting a decent swing into it, just not quite enough. That kind of thing just happens. But then the eighth inning rolls around, mm-hmm. and you get runners on first and second with nobody out. This is your spot.
Right.
First and second, nobody out, prime inning, you're into their bullpen, and yes, it's a very good bullpen, but you've got three cracks, and you're down one at this point. So you got three cracks to get that runner from second base aside. It's also worth noting that to even get to the first and second situation, Alejandro Kirk did a great job. He got hosed on a 2-0 call and still managed to fight back and poke one to right field to get runners on first and second. They pinch run for Kirk with Heinemann. So that sets up, you've got Ernie Clement up, and the Jays opt to bunt to move the runners from first and second to second and third. What follows is Miles Straw pops out to shallow right field, and Nathan Lucas pops out to third base. Not great, Julia.
Okay, let me ask you this, and we spoke a little bit before the show here about the decision to bunt with Ernie Clement at bat, Miles Straw and Nathan Lucas coming up. I am very curious, actually, to hear what you may have on just the numbers and the analytical side of that decision. And then I'll tell you, just from where I was sitting, what I thought of that play.
Okay. So, you know, I get, you know, kind of pigeonholed as an analytics guy sometimes. And what comes with that is I don't like bunts that much. However, if there were going to be a situation where I would be in favor of bunt, runners on first and second, nobody out, a light hitting batter, and you're down one run. Now, bunting in that situation, let's assume a successful bunt. Based on league-wide data from the last couple of years, your expected runs for the inning goes down. It is a negative in terms of expected runs. You go from 1.46 runs to 1.38 runs. Negligible difference, but it goes down a little bit. However, what goes up is you go from there is a 61% chance of you scoring a run to there is a 68% chance of you scoring a run. So if you are down one, you're the home team, and the top of the order would be coming up in the ninth. I'm okay with playing for that little more. You're trading in total runs for a slightly higher chance at getting one run that ties the game, sends you to the ninth. Jeff Hoffman's available. You got the top of the order coming up. Big caveat. Those numbers do not know that Miles Straw and Nathan Lucas are coming up, and you have nobody available on the bench because Tyler Heinemann has already pinch run. Those guys have already come in and pinch hitters. The only guy left on the bench is Dalton Varsho, who's out with a sore back. So analytically, it's a coin flip. It kind of comes down to your preferences. But then when you factor in that it's Miles Straw and Nathan Lucas up, tough one. Very tough one.
Yeah, that's the bit. When you were sort of explaining that, the one thing that I got caught up on is it is not the top of the lineup coming up
right.
behind
in the ninth, it would be, is yes. the argument for tying the game. Let's get out of here with the tie right. and then the top of the order's up in the ninth.
Right.
But you don't. You have Miles Straw and Nathan Lucas up.
You don't. And listen, I know that Clement has not hit like we saw him hit last year. He was, you know, important for the Blue Jays, even though it was a down season. He was one of the bright spots, let's put it like that. Tremendous contact ability is what he showed last year. There was one point where he was not striking out or walking at all. It was every at bat was decided on contact. Now, obviously he has taken a step back this year, and you know that's evident with the numbers. He also showed up for the Blue Jays a little bit over the weekend. The contact seemed to be getting a little bit better. That has not come with any consistency. Not a ton has come with consistency this year
but
for the Blue Jays.
What you're saying is you like the potential for Ernie Clement to put bat on the ball.
Actually put the bat on the ball in that situation. I know that Hunter Gaddis has been very, very good this year. He wasn't very, very good in those two at-bats that we saw in the eighth inning there. He walked Springer, and some of those pitches were not even close.
And he probably would have walked Kirk if he didn't get that really favorable 2-0 call, because the 2-1 that Kirk then swings at is also outside.
Absolutely.
He might have walked the first two
Absolutely.
Guys.
And Kirk is thinking, okay, if that was a called strike, I need to swing at this. And you look at the location of the pitches in that Kirk at-bat. The game plan was very obvious, and if we're noticing it, Kirk is going to notice it, and he's swinging the bat better, so made good contact. There you go. Got a single. Doesn't show a lot of faith in Ernie Clement, does it? And I'm also wondering what that does for a struggling player who is trying to figure it out, that the directive is immediately bunt.
So it's tough because on the one hand, it does show maybe a little lack of confidence in Ernie Clement, but I did just lay out the case that, like, numbers wise, he's the best bunter on the team, also other than maybe Dalton Varsho. So maybe there's a trust factor in him getting that down. It's either a vote against Ernie Clement or a vote in favor of Miles Straw and Nathan Lucas. And no disrespect to Nathan Lucas, who had the big moment Friday, and if we look at the larger sample, has hit righties pretty well over the course of his tenure here. You're picking between Ernie Clement and Miles Straw, and I think given the track record, I would have preferred Ernie Clement to get a hack at it. I would have preferred you to have more options than Ernie Clement,
Absolutely.
Miles Straw, and Nathan Lucas in that situation. But yeah, I probably, it's a tough one. Putting a guy who was off the major league rosters and you had to be paid to take on this year because his bat is so light. I know he's off to a decent start from a contact perspective this year, but that's a tough one. Trading in Ernie Clement to put him in a higher leverage spot
and
is a tough one.
It's been a while now since that hot start for Miles Straw. He hasn't been swinging the bat the same way. He hasn't been getting the results that he did early on. And so,
And the hot start was like 12 at-bats.
Yeah, listen, maybe if that was still ongoing, then there would be a little bit more of an argument of, okay, we're just riding a hot bat here. We're seeing what he can do, what he can come up with in that situation. That has not been the case. Straw is not hitting as well as he did early on. And so, I would rather trust Ernie Clement in that situation, but you know we are nitpicking a little bit here, Blake. We are talking about the micro level
but like that's how you lose a 5-4 game
exactly.
and a 5-3 game. Like
exactly.
if you're not gonna hit tanks, if you're gonna be back into dead last in home runs because the Royals hit 7 against the Orioles yesterday, if you're not going to hit the long ball and be able to put together the big inning, you have to execute on the micro stuff, and they didn't do that over the course of the weekend. So, yeah, hey, here's the run expectancies before and after a bunt is a little nerdy, but that's the stuff that's going to matter if you can't put up a 3 spot in most of these innings. And by the way, then in the ninth, they got runners on first and third thanks to an error and a single, and that only scored 1. Vlad got a sacrifice fly, and then Santander and Springer go down as well. So some missed opportunities there. I want to steer off of that conversation. First, I think we did like 15 minutes nitpicking the poor execution, so I think that's good. We got Levi Weaver coming up, but there are a couple news items that we should touch on as well for this Blue Jays team. The first just came down on Twitter. Ross Stripling announced his retirement today. So all the best to Chicken Strip.
Yeah. Congrats, man. That's pretty awesome. We all remember him. He meant a lot to this team a few years ago.
Out of nowhere value as a swingman.
That's legitimately,
And then got paid, so good for him. Okay, so speaking of swingmen and depth to the starting rotation, possibly even the bullpen, the Blue Jays are off today. They will play the Angels tomorrow. There is a big old TBD on the probable pitchers. They made two moves, neither of which is official, but the team talked pretty openly about them as far back as Friday when we spoke to Ross Atkins. He didn't speak by names, and then John Schneider yesterday was speaking pretty openly about it. The Blue Jays have signed Spencer Turnbull to a major league deal. Now, Turnbull hasn't been throwing. He hasn't been in games. I would imagine he's going to have to take an optional assignment to build back up, similar to what we saw last year with Jordan Montgomery elsewhere and things like that, even though he's not optionable. Mm-hmm. You can do a ramp-up assignment. Spencer Turnbull, if you forget, 2.65 ERA last year as a swingman, kind of going between roles, 4.26 career ERA, mostly as a starter. Not going to blow anyone away, but six pitches, all of them that he locates pretty well. Nice uptick in strikeouts last year because the spin stuff, the curveball and slider were pretty good. But he's kind of a Bassett light in that he'll mix and match and keep guys off balance and things like that. Good starting pitching depth, and it is a major league deal. So whenever that optional assignment, the build-up is done, he'll be on the major league roster, whether it's as SP5, long man in the bullpen, whatever. They also signed Jose Urania, who was recently with the Mets. He got rocked in three innings with them. He had a 3.80 ERA last year, but the 5 years prior, he had ERAs north of five. He's never been a big strikeout guy, but he throws 97 and gets a ton of ground balls. I'm imagining that's what they're looking at here.
Right.
Hey, maybe he could be a better Zach Pop if we tweak the pitch mix or really get the location down on the sinker. Either way, two warm bodies coming in.
Yeah, depth move, I would say, with Urania. When you look at both or each of those signings, it does feel like the Turnbull signing is the one that has the potential to be a little bit more long-lasting. Let's put it like that. Obviously, Urania is around for a reason, and he has had several years in Major League Baseball at this point. A little bit of everything for him during that time as well. The one thing that I, looked at a little bit more in depth is the home runs can get to be a problem if you're not striking guys out a ton. But yeah, looking at Turnbull, I like this because number one, it's a guy who's done it before multiple times, and he thrived pretty much doing whatever the Phillies asked of them until obviously he went down with an injury in June, but started in the rotation. He did surprisingly well with that, and then moved to the bullpen when their depth got a little bit better. Pitched well out of that spot too. They asked for one inning at certain points. They asked for three innings at certain points, and he's pretty much down for whatever. So, that's definitely what the Blue Jays need right now when you look at the state of the rotation and how taxed this bullpen has been.
Yeah, Turnbull was kind of one of those guys that spring training open is like, really? He's not signed? And he did end last year with a lat injury, but the reports were that he pitched for teams, including the Blue Jays, ahead of spring training. So not sure how long the ramp-up period will be. The note on Urania's home run issues is amusing because he does have these sky-high ground ball rates year after year. But if you can get it in the air, it's going to fly a ton.
Yeah.
And look, the changeup and slider are the pitches that he has, at least last year, given up a lot of, not a lot, but like the home runs come on that. The sinker, he does a pretty good job keeping on the ground. But as we know with a sinker, especially if you're pitching righty to lefty, if that thing cuts back in, it can cut back into a lefty's bat path. So you better locate it really, really carefully if you're pitching on the inner edge. So we'll see how that works out. Maybe they've got something they can tweak with him. Maybe they just want, an upgrade on the Josh Walker spot for this Angels series. We're going to see Yusei Kikuchi in this series.
I'm looking forward to that,
which is nice. There's a lot left from the weekend that we'll have to touch on later in the show or in other days this week. I mentioned that the Royals hit seven home runs yesterday, which is, twisting the knife a little bit when you're the Blue Jays. Good weekend for Bo Bichette is the one thing I'll say as well. I did a Blue Jay Central hit on him Friday pregame about how, his .293 average at that point was pretty empty. He was bottom 15 in the league in isolated slugging, so how much you're adding on top of your batting average with extra base hits. He was obviously stuck on zero home runs for 63 straight games and almost a full calendar year. And Chris Black had a good thread on Twitter the other day about Bo's struggles jumping on fastballs in on the plate. And all weekend, he did what I had talked about on Blue Jay Central, did what Chris Black had talked about on Twitter, just jumped all over fastballs on the inner half for extra bases. So that was really nice to see. Probably the positive from the weekend.
Yeah, he needed that home run. And he needed to attack that specific pitch and that specific game plan. Speaking post-game after that homer, you know, he's not one to elaborate very much. One thing he did say was, listen, it's not always that simple, right? It's not always that simple where,
they're go pitching hit 98 inside. And on your hands, yeah.
There's obviously more to it than that. This is a very complex game, and this is a very complex hitter, you know, whether you like it or not. There's a lot going on at any given time if Bo Bichette is swinging the bat. So I agree with him. It's not always that simple, but when you can identify a game plan against you, it does make things a little bit easier, I guess, when it comes to making adjustments. And that is very much what he did. He's getting in a groove. He's talking about doing good things, staying comfortable, slowing the game down, getting back to himself. And listen, you know, we can break down the numbers all we want. At the end of the day, a guy like Bo, he needs to feel comfortable and confident in order to get that, you know, so-called A swing out. There is a lot going on with his mechanics. There's a million things on his mind, I'm sure. And when you just are able to slow the game down and when you're able to just trust yourself and trust your ability to get to those pitches, high velocity, in on the hands, whatever it is, I'd say that's a pretty good place to start. And we're seeing way more of that this year than we did last year with him.
Yeah, and certainly more than last year. We'll see if he can, you know, kind of level off at the level that, you know, the Blue Jays need him to be, which is kind of 2021, 2022 level. 2023, I'm sure they'd take in a pinch, but they would love 2021, 2022 Bo Bichette the rest of the way here. Average sitting at .288 now, but nice to see that one home run, and he's now crossed the league average mark again in terms of weighted runs created plus. So taking everything into context together, better days ahead, hopefully, continuing for Bo Bichette. Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're joined by Levi Weaver. If you are mad at the Blue Jays offense and you are yelling for heads to roll and someone tells you it's early, the Texas Rangers fired their offensive coordinator yesterday. Not advocating for any of that here necessarily, but it is interesting. Let's talk to Levi Weaver about the Texas Rangers. We'll whip around the weekend that was in Major League Baseball as well. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkin Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Glad we snuck in Turnbull and Urania before the break there, because the news became official. During the commercial, the Blue Jays have signed Spencer Turnbull and Jose Urania to major league contracts. In corresponding moves, Max Scherzer and Eric Swanson have been moved to the 60-day IL. Both of those are retroactive until to when they first went on the IL. So no big change in their update there. Swanson, the latest on him is he's going to try to get back in games in Dunedin this week. Scherzer threw a quote-unquote heavy bullpen on Friday. The next step for him, if he feels good, would be to face live hitters and then start thinking about a rehab assignment. So if you're thinking 60-day IL for Swanson, that's late May. For Scherzer, it's, I believe, early June, but that's probably a reasonable timeline for either. Corresponding moves elsewhere, Jordan Walker was optioned to AAA, or Josh Walker, rather. Jordan Walker is the big guy for the Cardinals. Josh Walker optioned to AAA. And so that means Jose Urania is going to be on the active roster for tomorrow. Small flurry of moves, bigger moves in Texas, where they let go their offensive coordinator just a month into the season. Let's talk to Levi Weaver of The Athletic, of the Windup newsletter about it. Levi, good morning, man. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good, man. Nice to see you. Before we get into the Texas Rangers things, actually, I teed it up that way. I got to ask a stats question. Your personal stolen base pace in your hardball league right now, how's that look? You told me at the start of the season you had some stolen base goals. Are you out there running or what?
Yeah. My body my body keeps the score. I'm very sore today. We played over the weekend. I'm doing all right. Here though, like, I'm cheating a little bit because last year I didn't count any stolen bases I got when I was pinch running, because we get like free substitutions to pinch run for the catcher. And I only got 38 last year, and I was like, you know what? This year I'm counting it. I'm counting, and I'm up. It's been six games. I've got like 20, I think 26 stolen bases this year. So,
jeez, yeah. Well, maybe the Texas Rangers should call you up for that
in the first games. That's 26.
Yeah,
those are some Chandler Simpson numbers right there.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't enough to keep Leody Tavares on the roster, but maybe it could be enough for Levi Weaver. Levi, I know you cover the whole league now, but let's check in on those Texas Rangers. Is this the earliest you can remember a team letting go of a, I was going to say hitting coach, but offensive coordinator in the parlance of the day? 29th in runs.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure there have been people who have been let go earlier, but nothing comes to mind. But yeah, it wasn't just this year, though, right? Like, mm-hmm. This is a team that was such a good offensive team in 2023. You have some mashers on there with, you know, Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, Adolis Garcia, who I know can be streaky. He's very good. Josh Young. I mean, guy after guy. And then last year, the offense just wasn't very good. And there were some injuries, and there were some questions of like, well, you know, it's just, you know, they won the World Series last year. Let's cut them some slack. Been real bad this year. It's been just an absolute mess. And so this is usually the way that things go, right? First, it's some coach, whether that be a hitting coach, a pitching coach, a bench coach maybe at some point. But, you know, then it advances up to manager, and then, you know, you get guys that are being DFA'd and traded and cut. We the Rangers skipped straight to the almost DFA point. They put Leody Tavares on outright waivers. So big, yeah, kind of like splashy moves, if you will. And also Jake Berger was sent to the minor leagues earlier last week. So the Chris Young is not messing around. I don't think he's happy with, you know, 2 years in a row of underperforming after the glory of the 2023 World Series.
And Chris Young was also very honest about that. I believe the word he used was edgy or something like that. It's you know, yeah. You can see the radical nature, I guess, of some of these moves. But when you look at what this offense was in 2023 and where it is right now, we've had similar conversations, obviously, about the Blue Jays and just how steep the decline has been offensively. But is there, you know, can you pinpoint to anything really that has happened here? How has it been this steep?
Yeah, you know, last year there were numbers you could see where, like, they just didn't hit high-velocity fastballs very well. It just wasn't something they did well. So they brought in Jake Berger and Jock Peterson. Those are two guys that are supposed to mash fastballs. Berger's in the minor leagues. Jock Peterson just got out of an 0-for-41 slump. Those moves didn't pan out as they would have hoped yet, right? Like, it's the first week of May. Maybe they will. But I there's nothing yet, you know, that I've been able to dig into and be like, oh, it's this one thing, right? Like, they can't hit curveballs on the outside of the play. Like, I don't know. It's just been like almost a contagion of not hitting the ball very well. And then they'll break out and score 15 runs against the A's and then go right back to like not scoring at all. So I'm flummoxed is the word that I think I want to use here.
Yeah, and I can get there with like one or two guys, right? Like the shine coming off of Party Jock, and it just falls apart at 29. Like, it's like, okay, he kind of has the profile of a guy who might just, you know, lose a step at one point. Corey Seager going from superhuman to just good, you know, hey, that happens over the course of a month. But then it's everyone. You guys mentioned Berger. Adolis Garcia has performed. And then probably the strangest one to me, and I know he's older. I know he's 34 now, so maybe that's just what it is. But Marcus Semien was like the picture of consistency and durability and everything like that for like a good like half decade or more. And now he's stuck in, you know, last year he was pretty rough, and now it's pretty ugly at this point. So yeah, I'm with you, man. I don't know what the explanation is, but it seems to have affected kind of everything there except, I don't know, like Josh Smith maybe, but why Langford? But pretty much
been really good.
Yeah, pretty much everyone else though.
Yeah, and Marcus Semien has kind of traditionally been a slow starter a little bit, so you got to think he's going to come out of it. You know, Seager spent some time on the injured list, so there's guys that you expect are gonna pop out of it, but they kind of didn't last year, so there's no guarantee. So who knows? Maybe, you know, sometimes these shakeups work, sometimes they don't. But yeah, big, as you mentioned, like pretty early in the season to be making such big moves.
Levi, let's end this Rangers discussion on a little bit of a positive note. Let's put it like that. But Jacob deGrom has looked very, very good. Maybe a little bit of a limit to his pitch count, but he is, you know, looking like the Jacob deGrom, maybe not vintage, peak Jacob deGrom, but he's been obviously important for this team. I believe he pitched in both of the Rangers' wins during the last homestand. What have you seen from deGrom so far this season?
Yeah, it's almost one of those, the calculus has been, would you be a superhuman if you only got to pitch maybe like less than half of the time, or would you be like pretty good and get to pitch all the time? And up until now, it looks like DeGrom has taken the former. This year, you know, the fastball is 97, 98. It's not 101 like we used to see from him, but he's been just good. He's been really good. And for DeGrom, that's a tick or two below what we're used to seeing from him, but also he hasn't gotten injured yet this season, which is a tick or two above what we've seen from him in recent years. So I guess the equation is that if he gets to, you know, maybe 80% of Superman DeGrom is still a really good pitcher, and maybe that's what you want.
Yeah. Do you want 120 innings of 261 ERA or like 60 innings of 160 ERA? It's a tough one. More great stuff on the Texas Rangers situation in the latest edition of The Windup with yourself and Ken Rosenthal. Everyone should subscribe to that and get it in their inbox every morning from The Athletic. Let's move off of the Rangers here, Levi. Julia mentioned Chandler Simpson earlier. Look, league-wide, they tweaked the rules a couple years ago, so everyone's running like Levi Weaver now. But this year, we've actually seen another uptick in stolen base aggression around the league. Pitchers and catchers can't catch up. Stolen base success rate is up around 78%, so well above still what the theoretical break-even would be. And then we get a guy like Chandler Simpson in, who pinch runs and steals two bases, scores from second on an infield single. Obviously, the more stolen bases makes for more fun. It's an exciting play. How much do you appreciate the fact that maybe Chandler Simpson would make it anyway because the defense is good and the hit tool's high, but more room for a guy like Chandler Simpson and Chandler Simpson types in a 2025 style game?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, we used to get guys like this in the league. Herb Washington is a fun little story about this guy who was signed to just be a pinch runner. And then some of this is just my own personal bias, right? And not just, we're not talking about my Sandlot running. That's dumb. I'm 45 years old. I'm not fast. But I've always enjoyed watching stolen bases. It's like this little cat and mouse game of, you know, the base runner's focused in and trying to get a tip on when the pitch, you know, what's the pitcher's move, and you have to get the exact right break. I think the stolen bases are fun. I think it should be a big part of the game. And I personally am glad they did it. Now, catchers obviously hate it. Pitchers are probably not too fond of it, but more action. And it's not just the stolen base rules, right? Like, it's not just the bigger bases and the limited throwovers, but limiting the shift was to bring more action into the game. And baseball is a big, big ship, and it's got not a huge rudder. And so it takes some time to get the thing turned around. But pretty quickly, and I think more quickly than we've seen in past changes in the sport, you started seeing guys value the on-base guys, the speed guys. And home runs are great. That is still the fastest way to win a baseball game. But when you've got guys that can set the table like that, you've got guys that can, if you're at the stadium and you see this guy sprinting as we're watching him, you know, slide into home right now, that's fun to watch. It is not fun to watch a team just sort of like the late 90s, early 2000s Red Sox just bore you to death by getting like three walks, two strikeouts, and a home run. And you get that one moment of like, cool, big home run. That was a lot of fun. We're going to do this twice a game. And instead, every inning now, we're getting something.
Yeah.
And on the other side of those Red Sox game, Daisuke Matsuzaka was pitching. So it was like a 4.5 hour game every time, because you'd see a guy who, I don't know if he would have survived survive the pitch clock era. It's a tough one.
Aren't you glad we are in the modern day baseball?
Loved watching him pitch. Didn't love being up till 1 a.m. for a regular season baseball game.
The Chandler Simpson style of play is even more fun in my mind when he is doing it against a team like the New York Yankees, right? It's something beautiful to sort of see the David and Goliath type of thing, and Chandler Simpson just really just wreaking havoc. And I wanted to ask you a little bit, Levi, about, you know, just the state of the AL East, where we are right now. It's a bit surprising, I guess, that it hasn't been as dominant a division as it's been, but a ton of injuries for sure. What do you make of, you know, where the Yankees are, where this division is, and comparing it to the rest of baseball?
Yeah, I mean, a ton of injuries across the board, right? Like, the Yankees are missing Gerrit Cole, and they're missing Carlos Stanton. Jazz Chisholm is on the IL now. They should have, really, coming into the season, if everybody had been healthy, they should have been pretty easily the best team in the division. But they're vulnerable now. And, you know, the Red Sox have had their fair share of injuries. And I kind of like the Red Sox coming in. I like the moves that they made in the offseason. I thought that they would be maybe better than a lot of people thought. The biggest disappointment, and they've had a lot of injuries too, the Baltimore Orioles are bad. Like, this was the year in, you know, 5 years ago, I was like, 2024, 25, they're going to be really good. Ton of regular season wins in 2023. They were ahead of the game, and we're all like, here they go. It's all happening in Baltimore. It's not happening. I don't know why. The Blue Jays have underperformed on offense. I don't know why they're not hitting. I probably had the same question for you guys that you had about the Rangers for me. And then the Rays, you know, I mean, this is just, I think, kind of their cycle. They're going to go from being like, how are they this good, to like, well, yeah, they should be pretty bad and they're still okay. It's a fun division to watch, but yeah, I mean, the balance of power has shifted now. I think it's all over in the National League, really. The NL East and the NL West are both just shockingly good divisions.
And it's really hard to parse as someone who covers the Blue Jays, because for literally decades, back to my childhood, the AL East has been so difficult. And I watched 87 win teams not have a chance at getting a wild card berth and things like that. And now it's like, well, the AL East is like a little bit more wide open. The Jays are arguably the healthiest of those teams, other than maybe the Rays, who are down McClanahan, but are otherwise in pretty good shape. And yeah, it hasn't run away. You're only 2.5 games out, but you also haven't made hay while the sun's shining here. You could have had yourself in a better position. So what I'm saying is, while they are in fourth, it's their own doing. They have failed to take advantage of this. Whereas you mentioned the NL West, the poor Diamondbacks are in fourth, and would be, like, a couple days ago, they would have been leading several divisions. When you look at that NL West, obviously the Dodgers are the Dodgers, healthy respect for the Padres. The Giants and Diamondbacks being right, the Diamondbacks have slid a little bit, but right there with them. I guess what I'm trying to ask is the top of that division, if the Giants are for real, like, are the Diamondbacks going to be the NL West version of what the Jays were in the AL East for a long time, where it's just like, there's just too much going on in that division, even with the free wins you get against the Rockies?
Maybe, or we might see something really weird.
All four?
And if the Diamondbacks are better than, like, the Phillies, you might get all four of those NL West teams in the playoffs. I don't think that's impossible.
When's the last time that happened is kind of where my mind goes.
I mean,
right?
I can't imagine ever happened, right? Because the three wild card spots recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened in the three wild card situation. So it hasn't happened at all. It would be, I mean, I'm kind of rooting for that. That would be pretty fun.
Yeah. The Diamondbacks are only a game back of the Phillies right now. Obviously, it's way too early to look at that, but for context, they're only a game back. And yeah, you can, you have to play the Dodgers, Padres, and Giants a lot, but you also get to play the Rockies a lot, who, by the way, if anyone hasn't been paying attention, they're 6-28.
That's been tough.
At the end of April, were worse than last year's Chicago White Sox team somehow, which I didn't think was possible.
Yeah, it's ugly. So rooting for the Diamondbacks, they almost feel like the kind of underdog within that, because the other teams are either bigger budget or bigger name or whatever. The Giants in there are kind of an in-between, obviously a big team. Are you buying on what they've been able to do so far? The Jung-Hoo Lee stuff has been really fun, and just, I don't know, seems like I love that park. Seems like a good time there right now.
Yeah, I mean, talk about the, like, speed and contact and on-base guys. Jung-Hoo Lee has played like a superstar in the 2025 version of the game. He's been so much fun to watch. I don't know if I'm buying the Giants. I am buying him as a fun player to watch. Matt Chapman is a ton of fun to watch play third base, right? I think they need just a couple more, maybe even just one, but they need some more bangers in that lineup. They need to have the guys who can really like drive in those runs. I really want to see them make a move, maybe earlier rather than later, to bring in just a massive bat to sort of counterbalance, or not counterbalance, but like to take advantage of these guys that are getting on base and scoring. And they're fun. I don't know if they're as if I had to pick three teams that are going to make it out of the NL West, I think the Giants would be the one that don't. But they've been a lot of fun.
Well, they have been fun, and that's a nice nod to the Diamondbacks can obviously hit the ball. We'll see how much they can prevent runs, but they can really hit it. Levi, really appreciate you. Actually, really quickly, I see you with the Idol shirt on there. I know you're obviously a music guy by background. What do you listen to lately?
Oh, you know, I've been listening to this. Like, I'll sing it for you, actually. It goes, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Did you guys know it's Blake's birthday?
Oh, yeah, thanks, Ben.
Adorable.
No, that's what I've been listening to. No, the new Fontaine's DC album has been in heavy rotation over here. So that's my latest obsession.
Awesome. It's a great, great pull, great shirt with the Idols there. Thanks so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Anytime.
Levi Weaver of The Athletic. Again, it's the wind-up newsletter. You can get it in your inbox from Levi and Ken Rosenthal every morning. Strongly recommend you do that. Some good stuff on the Braves in there today. We didn't get a chance to talk about it because the Braves are not one of these class of the NL teams just yet. But
just yet.
To give you context of how tough the NL is, we talked about four teams in one division, two in another division, and oh, by the way, the Braves are lurking. And the reason they're the headline in the news in the wind-up is Acuña's getting close.
Getting close,
and that makes them a little more interesting if they haven't gotten too far behind just yet. Then there's also the Cubs in the Central, who have been arguably one of the best offensive teams.
Absurd.
You check out the NL leaderboards in any offensive stat and there are Cubs all over it. Seiya Suzuki, Pete Crow Armstrong has gone from like Statcast darling to regular stats darling. Now it's a lot going on in the NL. And then in the AL you have, I don't know, the Mariners and Tigers have good pitching staffs. Okay.
Right on. Yeah.
And that's all we got in the American League right now.
Yeah. It's everything is kind of a circle, right, Blake? It is it's a cyclical league. It comes and goes, and the NL is having its moment right now, which I don't know. It does make for, I guess, more entertainment and more interesting storylines. It's cool to talk about different teams for a change.
It's also, I think, the most important thing. Obviously, the league likes the parity that it has overall. I don't think the NL being better than the AL, that imbalance is that important big picture, because AL teams are focused in the AL and you primarily focus in the AL. I think the important thing is that the AL is close and the NL is close. The degrees to which those closenesses exist, that is relevant for league-wide discussion. But a Blue Jays fan only really cares that they're still in striking distance of the Yankees, not that the Dodgers or Padres look way better under the hood.
For sure. Yeah. If you approach it from a place of team fandom, for sure, I'm with you. As a fan of the sport, of the game as a whole, it has been, selfishly just nice to see a little bit of a shakeup and looking at different spots, I guess, for that excitement, if that makes sense.
And especially if, I'm bogged down with NBA and NHL playoffs right now, so my West Coast baseball watching hasn't been through the roof. But when that stuff wraps, having a bunch of West Coast start time teams that are really good and really interesting is perfect. Speaking of West Coast start time teams, the Toronto Blue Jays will start a series with the 13-20 Los Angeles Angels tomorrow. They are a -64 in run differential. Only the Rockies have been worse than the Angels so far by that measure. Here's the caveat with strength of competition. You got to play well to take advantage of it. We'll see if the Blue Jays can do that tomorrow. It's TBD against Tyler Anderson. We'll be back tomorrow to set it all up for you. Dan Shulman will join us. Riley Breckenridge will join us for the Angels side. Thanks today to Levi Weaver for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mann, Austin Mackey, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Julia, you have an evening off from baseball.
Should be fun. Happy birthday again, man.
Thanks. This is the most happy birthdays I've ever gotten on air. This is wonderful. Hope you guys all have a terrific Monday. And of course, go Leafs go. We won't talk about that on the show tomorrow, but we'll have a lot of good Jays stuff for you. Dan Shulman, Riley Breckenridge tomorrow. Have a great day.